Hello, everybody. Welcome, welcome. This is Joanna, and we are in our second of three online facilitation calls. And we're going to do something a little bit different today. So last week we did ceremony and ritual right before the new moon. You know, just a way of modeling some things that you can do facilitation-wise, curriculum-wise, online. And when we meet next week, we'll do a different kind of ceremony. So next week we'll move back to more of the kind of modeling and the experiential work and breaking down, and I'll show you some different techniques that I didn't show you last time, and we'll also get to do a whole lot of inner work together next week. But I wanted to do something a little bit different for today's class. Today's I'm going to be a little bit more in presentation mode because I wanted to, I realized there's, you know, what I don't cover in those three calls, and especially for those of you that are in the ritual and facilitation training, you know, one thing I don't cover is kind of looking at, aside from curriculum pieces, when you are leading and facilitating a longer-term program that has a lot of online components, or mostly online components, just looking at some special issues to be able to really facilitate not the actual sessions, but over time and format and all of that, you know, to really look at what are the best practices for online facilitation, what are the ways that are going to keep people learning the most, achieving the results that they want to achieve, and feeling engaged. And so we're going to look at some of those pieces today. And as we go into the material, I'll just share, you know, in the spirit of our ceremony last week, where we looked at perfectionism, you know, or under the right before the new moon in Virgo. I may have mentioned I am a Virgo, and I certainly have perfectionist tendencies. I'm completely detail oriented, you know, which is why I think one of the many reasons that makes me so proficient at curriculum and, you know, all of that. But I have to share that I'm kind of pushing my edge with that today. I just came back very late last night from traveling and being out of the office, and our flight got delayed by many hours because of the rain. And so I've got all of the curriculum that I want to share with you today, but it's just not exactly as organized as I would like for it to be. I am sure that you will get exactly what you need, but please ask me a lot of questions. Like I said, I'm going to just throw out any myth of perfection and be with you right here in the moment with my slightly chaotic notes. Okay. So, all that being said, let me just get, hold on one second, let me make sure I'm in the right thing here. Okay. Just wanted to make sure with the instant teleseminar was in the right place. So where I want to start today is to look at one of the most important issues or pieces that a leader, a facilitator of an online program needs to be thinking about. And what the issue is basically, especially if you're leading something that's more than a couple of weeks, you know, if you're teaching a one-time workshop or a 3 or 4 week class is not necessarily as important, but whether it's short or really or longer, one of the most important things you want to be thinking about is helping the your participants feel connection, feel like they're interacting with you and with the material that you're presenting, helping participants feel seen and heard and really engaged. Because you can have just the most incredible curriculum in the world, just masterful, brilliant new ideas of getting your folks from point A to point B. But if they're not connected, if they're not interacting, if they're not engaged, if they're not feeling seen and heard, then it's really hard for them to move through the steps. Now, of course, as we looked in Curriculum Lab, there's, you know, pre-steps that you're going to do in order to, you know, the steps 1, 2, and 3 in order to ensure that interaction, that feeling seen and heard. But there are other things that you want to be thinking about. And the way that I want you to think about this is a little bit in terms of how you're even setting up the format of the program that you're offering, because sometimes things, you know, like the first almost building block is the format of the program really ensuring that there's going to be this engagement, this connection, this interaction, this ability to learn. And a big mistake that I see a lot of facilitators and teachers make is that they set up the format. Now, when I say format, I mean how many sessions are there going to be, what kinds of sessions are there going to be, what's going to happen, you know, what kind of activities are happening in the sessions, in between sessions, right? So a big mistake that I often see happens is that people will set up the format of their online program without taking into consideration the amount of people that are in the program. And what I've really learned over the years of, you know, leading groups of small groups up to like groups of, you know, hundreds of people at a time, is that in addition to curriculum and in addition to like how you're facilitating your curriculum, the format is vital, because a format that works really well for 10 people is likely not going to work as well for 40 people or 100 people. And if you can really match not only the curriculum, the facilitation style, but the format to the amount of people, then you're really, everything is starting to work together to help create amazing results, to help create that sense of interaction. And, you know, one thing that I really take pride in is that people have told me they've been in groups with me of, you know, 100 and over, and they still feel connected. They still feel seen and heard. They still feel that they've received what they've desired from me and from the course and from the interaction. So much of that has to do with the format. So let's talk about that. And what I want to share with you is just from my experience, with different numbers, I've kind of broken it into, let's see, one, two, three, about four different groups, what really works well. So first let's take a look at if your group has six people or less, right? So anywhere from, you know, two to six people in a group. You know, you might, let's even take it a step back for a moment. You know, how do you even decide how many people you want to bring in to your group, right? Because it shouldn't be, oh, let me just try and get as many people as I can into my online program. You never want to conceive of a program that way. You always want to think about your hero. You want to think about where you want your hero to start and where you want your hero to end, right? And in addition to the curriculum, the other question you're going to ask yourself is, what is the format that's really needed here? And then how many people can this format really hold? Because not every format can hold every amount of people. So if you've got a group that are six and under, I really think of that size group as less of a program, like less of a group program, and more of group coaching. So what I mean by that is that if you've got six and under, there are few enough people in that group that you can really tailor and individualize what you're doing and what you're teaching and how you're going about so that it almost feels like one-on-one coaching. Really, so it truly almost feels that way, but of course then you get the benefit of the group. And the way that, you know, there's many different ways that you can do it, but I'll just share, you know, the way that I have found most successful, which is if I've got, you know, if I decide that I want to do group coaching as opposed to a group program, and I've got, you know, four, five, six people in the group, what I really like to do is instead of having straight up like presentation sessions or teaching sessions where I'll spend the full 60 minutes or the full 90 minutes, you know, presenting, and we do exercises, experiential exercises, sharing, you know, all that. Instead of that kind of format, I'll really think more along the lines of coaching. And so the way I would set the format up would be, you know, if it's a 90-minute call, I may spend the first 20 minutes of the call presenting something, presenting a topic, presenting a piece of the curriculum, you know, et cetera, teaching, leading them through a ritual or an exercise or, you know, whatever it is, and then really spending the bulk of the time giving each person in the group about 10 minutes. So in those 10 minutes, you know, usually what will happen is the person whose turn it is, I usually tell them try not to take more than 2 minutes, you know, to share. Oh, everybody will share celebrations. There's, you know, I always try to make space for that. So, you know, just to celebrate in community what you're celebrating. You know, share in community what you're celebrating, what's going well, to be seen and heard by everybody in the group that way. And then you get about 10 minutes to just present what it is that you need support on, whatever is going on for you in real time, whether it's related to whatever was presented earlier in the call or totally unrelated. And then I'll use the bulk of that time. You sometimes, depending on the amount of people, they'll get 10 minutes, 15 minutes, whatever it is. And then, you know, usually I will either just coach it out with them directly, or I'll really use the group as a mastermind to see, you know, who has input for this person. I'll usually give my input as well. And so when you do this, it really becomes an experience that's fully tailored to everybody in the group. They are, you know, getting what they need in every session. You're teaching less of a curriculum, though of course there can be curriculum embedded in there in that first portion of every call, but you're using the size to your advantage. You always, whether you're in person or online, you always want to use the size of the group to your advantage and to their advantage. And there's an advantage to every size group. When a group is smaller, the advantage is that it can feel way more intimate, it can be way more tailored, way more personalized. And when a group is that small, I very rarely even have all of the curriculum set ahead of time. I'm really, we'll talk about tracking in a little bit because tracking is an important piece of all of this, but I'm really like tracking week by week to see what it is that each individual needs, and then I'm presenting, you know, based on what I see, the almost like the collective needs. So that's if you've got a group of six or under. You don't, again, like six and under, you're not leveraging if you're doing just all teaching with Q&A, a couple minutes of Q&A at the end. You're not making the best use of that group and the energy in the group and what's available resource-wise in that group. So then after that, you know, the next category that I've seen is kind of like if you've got somewhere between 6 and 12, maybe 6 and 14 people in a group. Some people will call, you know, this amount, or it could be bigger, they'll call it a mastermind. But again, like, you know, people will just decide randomly, like, oh, I want to, you know, I think I want to offer a mastermind. You don't want to, I've found that that's not the best way to come to that conclusion. Again, the best way to decide what it is that you want to offer is to be thinking about where are my heroes starting? Where is my hero ending? What is it going to take them to get from point A to point B? And then what is going to be the best format and amount of people for that? So if you've got a group that's between 6 and 14, you still have this, you can still leverage just that there's very few people. You've got the resource of time, essentially, there, because there's few people. You can still give people a very personalized experience. You can still give people more time that's just focused on them, right? As opposed to if you have a group of 100 people, you can't do that. But in this amount of people, you still have that resource, yet you also have this resource of community. You've got it in the six and under as well, for sure, for sure. But there have been a lot of studies and research that has actually shown that until a group hits about 10 people, you know, if you're looking for very rich discussion, it's usually like 10 is somewhere between 10, 12, 14 in there. Those are the sweet spots because there's enough of a diversity of voices and of opinions The other reason is just because not everybody can make every call, right? So if you've got a group of six or under, yeah, you want to leverage the group for sure, but you still want to be thinking more along the lines of, like, this is a version of one-on-one coaching. So anyway, if you're getting to between 6 and 12, 6 and 14 people, what I have really found in terms of, like, facilitation of format to be most effective is still there's not a totally set curriculum. We're still not into, like, step one, step two, step three, step four, step five, because we're still, like, we can still tailor it quite a bit to each individual in the group. There is a curriculum, but it doesn't have to be, like, so set as when it gets to be some of the bigger groups. That's number one. And you can really, you have enough time and space that you still can really hear from each person on the call. So when I facilitate groups like that, I love to hear each person's voice in every single session. So as I'm really designing what the sessions are going to look like, I may include that, you know, in the beginning, each person shares their intention for the call, and I may call on each person, for example. We may have certain calls, you know, we may have different types of calls within the program, and some of them may be, you know, just Q&A, so that there's more opportunity for people to be heard. I also think a lot about the community, right? And here's the thing, like, when you're in person, when you're facilitating programs in person, and we'll look at this a lot in the ritual and facilitation training, the community is always, always, always going to be a piece of the facilitation, 100%. Like, when you're in the room with people, you need to consider community, and you want to leverage it, and you want it to be one of your assets. When you're facilitating an online program, you want to make a choice as you're developing the format of the program of whether community is almost like one of your methodology pieces in a way. You know, are you going to be using community as a factor, a learning factor, an engagement factor, a vulnerability factor, or is that something that you're not going to be focusing on? If it's a group of, you know, 6 to 14, I really like to not only think that they're learning from me, or I'm leading them, or I'm holding space for them, but that the entire group is really holding space for each other. And so because of that, as I work through curriculum and as I work through the format, I'm really embedding opportunities for a lot of sharing, for me not to even be the first person that speaks or responds, or, you know, but for people to really, in the community, to be giving each other feedback and support. And so I'll give you a couple of examples of this, and you can apply it to your own material. But, you know, one example is, for many, many years, I led a group, a small group of, usually there was around 12, 13, 14 women in it, and there was a variety of different pieces. It was a 12-month group. Most of these women continued year after year after year, so the circle knew each other very well. Part of the circle is we did meet for retreats a number of times a year, and some of the women received private sessions with me. And we also did have training calls once a month. So, you know, those would be more of like presenting curriculum calls. But another call that was part of the format that was really important, I think, for every member of the group is I call them Circle of Women calls. I've used this in a couple of different programs. And the Circle of Women call, you can lead it in a couple of different ways. One, it can be similar to what I was sharing with the six and under, but it's just more abbreviated. So each woman may have, you know, 8 minutes or so to just share whatever she wants to share, to be seen, not necessarily by me as the leader, but by her circle, by her community, to be seen in a celebration or to be seen in a struggle. As part of those shares, I always ask the woman to not only, you know, share what is wanting to be shared, what she's wanting to be seen for, but I always say, you know, what request do you have for the group? And, you know, sometimes it would be tactical or strategic requests, like, you know, because I help women with business, you know, it might be like, well, how, what would be a good way to market this? Or, you know, what would be a good title? You know, let me tell you this program I'm thinking of. What would be a good title? But honestly, most of the time, the requests were, you know, I would just love some feedback from my sisters on what they see in what I'm sharing here. I would love for my sisters to remind me that I can do this, that it, this is possible for me. I would love some wisdom from sisters in the group, you know, who went through this similar thing, this divorce, this, you know, what, this difficult, you know, whatever it is. And it was amazing to hold space and watch as these calls would unfold. They were these incredible community calls where it's like each woman got her dose for that month. You know, the months that we couldn't be together in person for retreat, she got her dose of like really, really being seen, really being heard, really getting support. And then also she got this beautiful experience, which we also all need, not just to get support, but to give support in this held container in this beautiful way, right? So that's one example of how you can get, you know, if you've got that smaller group, again, you want to leverage that it's smaller. You want to leverage the intimacy. I think you want to leverage the community if you decide community is important. That's one way of doing it. Another way of doing it, I'll share with you a little bit. So I just started a new program, and it's I've got my regular coach training program, which has many, many people in it, but now we have an advanced program. And so it's for women that have already been through the Sacred Depths training, and what they really want, this has been my dream for years actually, is a coaching supervision and a coaching mentorship. You know, I do this one-on-one. I supervise and mentor my clients, but I've always wanted a supervision group because there isn't really, that doesn't really exist in the coaching world, and it just can be so valuable. And so, you know, I've limited this group to 12 women only, and they've already learned so much in the year that they were in the regular coach training program. I mean, you know, I've got 30 different training calls in that program on everything, you know, from working with resistance archetypes to how to support clients to befriend their fear, to help clients get off the wheel of self-sabotage, to, you know, how to help clients move with the flow of time. I mean, there, and of course, all the listening skills and questioning skills, all of that, right? They've gotten so much material. This advanced program, fewer people, supervision, this is not about them, you know, getting more and more and more material, We're going to talk about that issue later also. But this is really about them going much deeper into their skills. So because the group is just 12 women, I get to be, you know, we can be so creative in this. So, for example, you know, one of our calls, we have a rotation of different kinds of calls that happen in the program. One of the calls is that you coach someone for 20 minutes in front of the whole group, and then you get feedback on your coaching. So you get a couple of times throughout the year that you get to practice and then get my feedback and feedback from everyone in the group. And it's an incredible learning experience, not just for the woman that's doing the practice coaching in that moment. It's definitely a learning and stretch moment, but it's actually such a mastery moment, skills mastery moment for everyone in the group to give to break down the skills and give their feedback on what they saw their peer doing and what really worked and what maybe they would have done differently, right? And it's also a way for everybody to give each other support, to feel seen and heard. Another one of the regular calls that happens in this program, we also do this in the regular coach training program in the Sacred Depths, but we do this even more in the Advanced Sacred Depths, is we have coaching clinic calls. And this is where each woman in the group brings a case studies of clients who she's working with, and we look at the case study, and I really help support her in figuring out where to take this client, what to do if this client is stuck, you know, so on and so forth. We've got some other different kinds of calls as well. But hopefully that gives you a taste of, okay, you know, I couldn't do that with 80 people in the online room, right? But with 12 people in the room, we can really we can get really far in terms of each person feeling seen and heard, engagement happening. You know, and then I've also embedded other opportunities into that program. Again, it would be harder with a lot of people in the program, but because it's 12, there's special opportunities for practicing that go beyond buddy coaching, but that are really about they're going to be getting together in trios and coaching in front of each other and giving each other feedback. And, you know, it may switch each time. And so I'm looking, again, to leverage the amount of people look at the amount of people and then look at what is the best format to achieve the goals. So then the next category that we get into is, you know, this kind of like next area. I debated whether or not to like divide into 12 to 24 and then 24 to 60, but I think I'm just going to lump them together. So the next kind of area here is like 12, 14, 16, something like that, all the way up to 60. Once you get, I mean, still really up to 24, there's still more tailoring that you can do, but once you get past 24 people, that's when you still want your participants to feel so seen and heard by you, so connected to you in the material, feel like they have opportunity to interact. But that's when you start to, you want to be thinking about it in some different ways, because it's a lot of people. And, you know, when you get to that amount of people, you can't really tailor to everybody's specific individual needs. So once you get to this, you know, amount of people all the way up to 60, you know, you can have training calls, and those training calls can be experiential. You can use, like, you just like techniques that I was sharing in Curriculum Lab that we looked at in the ceremony. I highly recommend, you know, as much as you can, including time for group sharing on those teaching calls, those training calls. I highly recommend including time for Q&A at the end of the calls. And then also those types of programs, you know, I really, with any amount of people, to have just a Q&A, open Q&A calls where people have the opportunity, and you're not teaching anything for that hour or that 75 minutes or whatever it is, but people just have the opportunity to ask questions so that they can, you know, get things answered, you know, especially if they're doing work, you know, moving certain goals forward throughout the program. It's important. Now, when I have a group, I usually won't do this if it's more than 60, but if it's somewhere between 20 and 60 and I'm not hearing from each person in the group every session in the ways that I was describing for the other, you know, groups that I was talking about, for me, and this is a personal choice, but for me, because I'm really, like, one of my philosophies in all of my business model in my coaching and my teaching, like, one of my philosophies is really about high touch. I personally believe a little bit the transformational industry has forgotten, you know, we've sort of gotten so caught up in more people in the program, bigger numbers, you know, mass, all that, which is nothing wrong with that. But I believe that we've forgotten that transformation, not always, but that a lot of the time what's required for true transformation is high touch, is actually having someone in one way or another hold your hand through the process, you know, is having a little bit of a tighter container and being held, being seen and heard. I just think for human beings is such a vital part of the growth process, the transformation process, the achieving our goals process. So what I do is 60 is usually my limit. I can't do more than that. But if it's a program where my team of coaches isn't helping me in one way or another, because then you can do this with even more people, but I will individually outreach to members of the program every now and again if I sense they need to hear from me, or maybe they've gotten a little off track and they need to be brought back into the container, or I sense maybe they need a little more support. And those of you that have been in Curriculum Lab, you may have noticed that I've done this. You know, I haven't reached out to everyone because if you've been engaged, if I've heard your voice, you know, there's been no need. But if I haven't heard your voice, you may have noticed that I may have sent a message and we've interacted, I've reached out. I do this very purposefully because I know that so many people get lost in a program with more people. And I really, as much as I can with the time that I have, I want to keep it high touch. I want to keep my attrition rate low, and I really want to do as much as I can to support folks to be able to achieve what they want through the experience. Now, of course, never want to take over responsibility here. You know, clients always have to meet you halfway. Sometimes I reach out to folks and they don't write me back, and I'll still write to them a few weeks later. You know, never. By and large, people will write back and will really thank me, and it will help them get back on track. So I do like to have that as an added piece. And then, of course, you know, having a Facebook group can really help keep people engaged, keep them feeling connected to you and connected to community, even if there's a lot of people, and can really help them get their questions answered. Now, if there are 60 or more people in the group, I'll just say, like, to me, what's different between that and then the, you know, 16 to 60, 20 to 60, whatever it is if there's 60 or more, obviously I can't do individual outreach to people that I wouldn't be able to run any other programs. So I may have some of the coaches on my team help me with that. But if you don't have coaches on your team, and again, this is for something that's over a period of time. If it's a real quickie program, you don't necessarily need to do this. But if it's over a period of time, you know, like more than a month or 6 weeks or whatever it is, sometimes having forms that participants can fill out before a session so that they can monitor their own progress, see what's moving forward, where they're feeling stuck, that can really help. Also, if I know that I can't hear from a lot of people on a call, like in shares or Q&As, you know, just because there's so many people, I will ask very specific questions. Like, I'll give specific assignments, not just those homework assignments, but post this on Facebook. I'll ask, you know, for the small Facebook group, I may ask a question like, you know, what are three things that you're going to do this week to move your marketing plan forward? Or let's say we've looked at the topic of boundaries in that training call. You know, in addition to whatever homework they have, I might say I'm going to post this thread on Facebook. I'd love for you to answer, you know, what was a moment in the last 6 months when you were really clear on your boundaries and, you know, how did that impact the situation? Or, you know, whatever the specific question I may ask, again, to create more engagement. And then that gives me opportunity to be able to comment on what people write, to have them feel more connected to me, which in turn will just help them be more engaged in the program, for people to comment on each other. I'm not always the best in Facebook groups because I don't like to be on Facebook every day. I do it, but sometimes I just like to, you know, not be on technology. And, you know, sometimes I think that affects how active my Facebook groups are. So just be transparent about that. But, you know, I think that the more that you can encourage people to use, if you're going to be doing Facebook groups and you're willing to put in the time and the energy, the more that you can really encourage people to use it, the better. I've got a lot more to share on this call. I know I've already shared a lot. I'm going to open up for Q&A in a moment before I then give you the rest of the content for the call. But just another piece I want to mention that I think goes along with everything I just shared, and that's about tracking. So whether I'm working with a client one-on-one or with a group, tracking it for me, like I've just learned from my many years of coaching and just working with so many people, it's not just about what happens in the session itself, but it's about how you as the coach and the teacher are tracking the client or the group's progress overall. This is a really big thing. One, you know, that we look at in the coach training, because what I see happening for a lot, just even in one-on-one coaching, is like people can be great at asking amazing coaching questions. Their listening skills can be wonderful, but they're not holding the bigger picture along with the smaller picture of the session, and that's when it's really hard to move clients forward. So for groups, I am always tracking as much as I can the individuals in the group. Obviously, that's easier if there's fewer people. But I try, even with if there's tons of people, I really try to track individually. But then I also track the group as a whole. And there are certain things that I integrate in to really help me track, and also to help participants track themselves. So first of all, we looked at this in Curriculum Lab, but takeaways, right? I try to always hear a couple of takeaways, even if there's a lot of people on a call. Takeaways are important for the person that shares the takeaway, but it's also important for me as the facilitator because it helps me see, are people getting the material? What do they still need? What's happening here? Where are the blocks, right? And then encouraging people to share their takeaways in the Facebook group. I like to do, this is for longer programs, usually if they're more like a year long, I like to do mid-program assessments. That could be a whole training call in and of itself, so I won't get into all of the details of it, but I like, I'll just say this, like I like to add a call in the middle of a program so that the clients can really assess, okay, this is where I've started when I started this program. This is where I am now. This is what's really working. These are the places where I've progressed. This is how much I've progressed. And now here are the places that I've really been stuck. Here are the places where I still have more to go. And then to help them bring that all together, the assessment, to really see the places that they need to work on. That can be just so uber helpful. And then the other way that I like to track, and this also just adds, all of these things just can add to the quality of a program. Again, this is a little bit more if it's longer term, you know, at least 3 months, is you can either have like a recurring monthly creation of monthly goals and action steps. That can either be a live class or just a sheet that participants fill out. Or I love to do this, and this I do live, a quarterly assessment. Okay, this is what happened over the last quarter. These are my goals for the next quarter. These are the steps that I want to take or the things that I want to work on, right? So like to do some goal setting actually will help you and your clients not only just add value and help move things forward, but it really helps with tracking. Okay. I just gave you a mouthful. There's still a lot that I want to share with you today. I know, as I said in the beginning, it wasn't as organized as I usually like for it to be, but hopefully you're getting what you need so far. I'd love to hear questions or what is it that you're, you know, hearing and taking for yourself so far. Star 2. Tiffany.
Hey, Joanna. Thanks for the call. I really appreciate that information just on tracking. Like super helpful. And I just have a specific question about it. Like, are you taking notes? I mean, and both those things. So having people share takeaways and mid-program assessment, you're asking clients to do the work, which is great, do their own work of where am I, you know, where am I as a client? Mm-hmm. But for you as the coach or the facilitator of the online doodad, are you taking notes on each client? Are you going back at, like, how much time are you spending?
Yep.
If they're giving you that information.
So okay. That, again, depends on the amount of people in the group. So mm-hmm. If it's a small group, I'll have each person share, right? And I'm generally not a note taker. Like, I don't take any notes on one-on-one, barely take notes on one-on-one clients. If it's a group of like 6 and under, I'll have them each share. It'll be a very interactive call. And so it's like all stored in my head, right? If it's a group that's bigger than 6, we'll still have some sharing. But I will in one way or another ask them to each like submit to me, just sort of, you know, I might give them like a form afterwards, just so that I can see. And if that group is like 20, 24 under, I will closely read through each thing. It won't take me more than 2 minutes or so to reach through each one. And then I will make notes for myself based on that. Like I'll think about the 6 or the 12 or the 24, and I'll start to see patterns, right? I'll start to see like, oh, they're really coming forward in terms of their ownership of their brilliance, But I can see a trend here that visibility is still an issue. You know, I wasn't going to do a visibility call for another, 2 months, but actually I think that's where I'm going to go next, right? And then if it's bigger than that, I may not read every single one, or I may not necessarily ask everybody to submit, but I'll start a Facebook thread or whatever, and I'll take in as much information as I can. I mean, generally, if I'm going to do a 6-month program or a 12-month program, I'm not going to have more than, I mean, in the coach training, we do have a lot of people, and that's, 10 months. But aside from that, if it's a 6 or 12-month program, if I don't have other coaches helping me, I don't really have more than, 30 people ever in those longer programs. Because again, this is just my philosophy. People are investing more, and so I want to give them higher touch. Does that answer your question?
Awesome. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Okay, great. Let's see who's next here. Inbal.
Well, that was super great. I had a similar question to Tiffany in terms of, I don't know if you have like an Excel sheet or just how you're kind of tracking it. So that was really helpful. And I'm also curious, that's another more like logistical question. I find that sometimes I can get like anxious or impatient if I feel like a share is going to go on for a long time. And I feel like both in person and online, even without saying, like you gave an example today of saying like, we'll each have 2 minutes. So I'm just curious if you have any like suggestions about how you navigate, and like when it's appropriate to kind of like bring someone in, and I think it would be different if like you have like a group that's all together and you set like guidelines versus like, a one-off or like 3 calls.
Right. So first of all, the guidelines are always helpful. And I even do this in person. Sometimes when we have like check-ins in the morning, I'll say each person has 3 minutes or whatever. There's a timer, and so that eliminates awkwardness if someone is going for a long time. But if it is more of like a Q&A or I'm asking for shares, there's a couple of things that kind of go like that I do, and it actually starts with the inner. So first is I'm always worried that people are going to talk too long because I want as many people to be able to talk. So the first thing is I first have to check my fears, right? Because I've certainly been guilty of stopping someone too early before like the nugget was going to come, right? We definitely don't want someone to ramble on forever. But first just make sure you're coming from an empowered place and not a fear place in it. So that's number one. But number two, once you've determined, okay, this isn't a fear place, I'm not hurrying and rushing in my mind here, but like really it feels like this is long or the person is rambling, then it's about, having the courage to lovingly direct the share. And in that case, I will interrupt and I'll say, I'm sorry I'm interrupting. I really want to make sure you get exactly what you need here. I think I'm getting most of the picture, but what I have a question on is this. And then I'll ask a specific question, or I'll say, I think I'm getting it. What I'm hearing is this. Am I getting it right? So I will start to kind of direct that share a bit more. Is that helpful?
Yeah, and do you have like that's totally helpful. And then like when you're doing a program and it's like let's say we have a 75-minute call or a 90-minute call, do you have a sense from the get-go of like how long you want the shares to take overall?
Yeah, I have a sense from the get-go, and then I always end up talking a little bit more than I thought I would, and it's usually slightly shorter than I wanted it to be. But yeah, I'm in my mind always saying like, okay, I know I have this much left. Now, we looked at this in Curriculum Lab, but I'll just repeat it again. Sometimes the Q&A is needed and the shares are needed, and so I will either save part of that curriculum for the next class, or I will sometimes add more calls into a program. Like, for I'm all about generosity, not for the sake of generosity or for overgiving, but if I see something is truly needed, I will give it because I want my clients to succeed. And then, of course, that just helps my business because, and you know, my reputation grows and those clients want more. So it's a little bit of a dance. Obviously, you don't want to do that with every call, but you can sense in if, like, oh, you know, more people need to speak here. There's a lot of questions here or whatever. Those questions may happen on that call, or you may add a call in for Q&A. Okay.
Awesome. Thank you. Yeah, and you did do that with Curriculum Lab. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Susie.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, excellent. I've never done this on the computer before, so I wasn't sure. My question is, it's a little bit regarding tracking also, but with regard to, you know, you had referred to maybe giving people homework in between, and kind of what it says when people aren't doing the homework. So I like to give homework. I call it homework. I don't know what else to call it. Work in between sessions to help them maybe embody what they've heard and kind of their takeaways, mm-hmm. become a little bit more intimate with them on a personal level. And when people aren't doing the work, or yeah, I guess that's pretty much it. I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about, as a facilitator, is there something that went wrong from the facilitation standpoint, or does it speak to some other issue?
Yep, that's a great question. So first of all, I feel pretty confident I can say this is fact. I feel 99.999999% comfortable I can say this is a fact. In any online program, there are just going to be a certain amount of people who aren't going to do it. It doesn't matter what you do as the facilitator, how amazing you are, whatever. In an online situation, because the container is just looser than when you're in prison. Like, you can't actually see the person. You can't make sure that they're there. You know, like, all of those things. Some people buy online programs knowing in advance that they're not going to listen to the recordings for 3 months, but they just wanted to get in on the deal then. I mean, that even happened this summer with curriculum. People told me, I'm buying this, but I'm not going to do it until the audit, you know, whatever it is, right? So in an online situation, there will always be a small percentage of people that just are not, for whatever reasons, something came up in their life or, you know, whatever it is, and that there's nothing that you can do. But that being said, you want to make sure, you know, I don't even know what percentage to put on this, but you want to make sure that you've got, you know, at least 65-75% of the people with you in one way or another, right? And so, like I said earlier, sometimes if I don't sense that that's there, I'll do the individual outreach to bring people back in. But even before that, you know, how you set the container, and you know, Susie, you'll be with me in person next month, and we'll really look deeply at how to set the container, and that will go for online as well. We did it a little bit already in curriculum, but like how you set the container, how you bring people in to the experience, how engaged you get them, how invested you get them when they start will always make a big difference in terms of not only how much they engage in the program, but how much homework, how much they're going to do the homework. The other thing that's really important is how you deliver the homework and how you speak about the homework. If you are just like, you know, and here's your homework assignment, which I'm guilty of sometimes, then the homework is not, you know, energy follows energy. So how important you make it is how important it's going to feel to the participant. So you want to look at, like, what is the respect and honor that you're giving the homework assignment. Sometimes you want to look to accountability. You know, how are you asking people to post about it? Are you asking them to submit it? Like, how are you helping to hold them accountable as well? So I think those three things, and part of giving honor and respect to the homework, just like everything else in the program, we looked at this a little bit, in Curriculum Lab, give it a good reason why. Like, explain you know, we're all of us are so used to our school years where it felt like teachers were just giving us homework for the sake of giving homework, right? But, like, if we can let our participants know the really good reason that we want them to do this thing and what it's going to do for them if they do the homework, then they'll be much more likely and much more motivated. The other thing I'll just say is make it easier than harder. You know, when people get overwhelmed, they're way quicker to check out than if they feel like, oh, this is easy peasy. Like, this is doable for me. And then the other thing I would just say, I guess I keep on having more things. The other thing is at the beginning of the program, you may want to say, you know, please set aside an hour a week. There's going to be this much homework every week. You should let people know beforehand. This is the amount of time that you're going to want to put in. Okay?
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Great question. And I'll take one more and then we'll continue on. Rana.
Hey, Joanna, the first questions around tracking were very helpful for me. I've got some of those things in place now, but I'm also seeing where that could be stronger for the one-to-one work that I'm doing with some of the clients now. And then my other question on a real practical level, mm-hmm. at the beginning of the call, you mentioned a call next week, but I think on the schedule there isn't a call, and then there's one on the 26th.
Yeah,
can you just confirm that?
Yes, you are absolutely right. I got it mixed up in my head. It's the 26th.
That's okay. I just wanted to make sure that I was on the right track on my calendar with you as well. So, so no call next week, but the call on the 26th, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Yay.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Okay, see, there are a couple of other hands that went up right after I said that I would take Rana and continue on. I'm going to lower everybody's hands right now, but I will make sure that we have a couple of minutes at the end for more questions. There are just a couple of other pieces I want to get through for you guys today. So what I wanted to share with you next is another lesson that I've learned over just serving many clients, individual clients and groups and all of that. And it's really important to think about, I think particularly for online because, it's good for in-person too, but particularly for online, if it's over a period of time, that's, I think, the important piece here. If you're with a group for a period of time, that there is a difference, a big difference, between learning something new and implementing what you've already learned. There's a difference between learning something new and then implementing what you've already learned. And when I'm putting a group together, when I'm conceiving of a new program or a new group, that's one of the questions that I am, one of the many questions I'm asking about the heroine and where they're starting and where they're ending. Is my heroine, is my hero, for what they want to achieve, do they need to, is this all about learning new skills? Or is this about going deeper with the skills that they've already learned? Is this about implementation and integration of skills that they've already learned? Now, a program can absolutely hold both. I'm not saying that it has to be either or. You can create a format that allows for both, but just know that when you create a format that allows for both, and you're not usually the implementation integration, you're going to skimp a little, sk- skimp, is that the right word? Yeah. It'll be slightly skimpier on the implementation piece, simply because usually the learning piece tends to take over, right? So you want to be really conscious about it. So you can put it into the same program, but that's like really one of the basic questions that I always ask when I'm conceiving something new. Is this like strictly learning new skills? Is this, they've already learned the skills, like that advanced coach training that I was telling you about, like that's so much about implementation and mastery of skills that I've already taught them. Or is this a combo of the two? So, you know, we have like for private programs, not the ones that when I'm working with a client privately so much, but like when my coaches are working with a client, you know, they may go through, for example, like our basic marketing program where you learn a lot of new marketing skills over 6 months. And then after that, oftentimes what we'll move that client in, we call it I&I. It's an I&I program. It's integration and implementation. They may not be ready for new skills, right? Now, some of those clients that go through those first 6 months, they're like doing great at implementing as they're going along, and they're ready for new skills at the end of the 6 months. So then they go into another program, right? But like there are just as many clients that they just need more time to do the implementation, to let not only the new skills but the new revelations, the new openings, like they just need more time for those to settle in before I throw a whole lot more on top of them. So we'll put them for 6 months maybe, or 9 months or a year, into implementation and integration where they're really integrating and moving forward actively with the skills. They don't need to learn anything new. They just need to, like, what they've done, like, really leverage it a lot, right? So that's one example. But another example, so then, you know, as part of this, I'll just say, so think about when you are teaching a program, right, at what point is the information overkill? I know everybody that's here, you have so much amazing content inside of you, like you're all thought leaders, but at what point in your programming are you maybe giving too much information to the point where it's actually not serving? And instead, where can you create more space for integration and implementation? So now I think a lot of programs do it, but like I was one of, I think the first person to do it, if not one of the first people to do it. You know, a lot of my 12-month programs that we work on marketing, we have regular, I call it get it done days, right? And it's just a full day devoted to, you know, everybody in the program has a project. You know, I'm not teaching them anything new that day, but like we are together as a group virtually online. We're meeting at the top. Well, we don't do it at the top of every hour anymore. It's usually like every hour and a half or so. They're doing work chunks, and they're actively implementing. They're actively getting something done that day. Or, you know, sometimes like if I'm teaching, for those of you that know what a lead magnet is, it's something that you use to, you know, an opt-in, a freebie, a gift, to bring more people into your community. Oftentimes when I teach about that, I won't just like teach it in a training call and then have everybody go off to do it. We may have a full day that's just about lead magnets, and maybe I'll teach for 45 minutes and then I'll give people a work chunk for an hour and a half, go do that first piece, and then let's come back together. What questions do you have? Now let me teach you the next chunk, right? So I want you to just be thinking about, as you're facilitating and setting your curriculums up and all of that, you know, when are the moments for learning and when are the moments for implementation? Does a particular program need to be longer because it requires implementation? So I always feel like Curriculum Lab, I'm just being full transparency, like I always want it to go on just a couple more weeks. Maybe next time I will even make it like 6 weeks or so. You know, obviously Curriculum Lab is so much about implementation, right? for some people, it takes like a good 2-3 weeks just to get into the material and kind of like get your act together and get going with it, right? So the length of the program, it really plays into this question of learning and implementation. Okay, two other pieces that I wanted to touch for today. And for those of you that are in the ritual and facilitation training, you know, we can go deeper with all of these pieces for sure when we're together. I wanted to talk a little bit about continuing groups. So I take a lot of pride in the fact that my clients stay with me for a very long time. By and large, they're very satisfied with the work that we do together. And I have a lot of programming where people just, they continue cycle after cycle after cycle, year after year after year. And, you know, some people don't, some coaches, entrepreneurs don't like this. They kind of like, I don't know, you know, in and out kind of people or launchers or whatever it is. I'm not like that. Like, I really love to work with people over a period of time. I love to create deep relationships and intimacy. I love it when I get to know my clients' brilliances and their strengths and their fears and their blind spots. And I can really use all of that to help them get better and better and better. You just achieve their results more and more and more. But anyway, when you're leading online or in-person groups, there's some special considerations that you want to be thinking about if it's the type of thing that people can refine and resign, you know, year after year after year. So the first is you can have the same curriculum, literally the same curriculum for a few years in a row and have the same people go through it. I know that sounds crazy, but sometimes it's necessary. Then this isn't just like for your ease so that you don't have to create new curriculum. You want to be thinking about all of this strategically and about results, right? So this goes back to learning versus implementation. Sometimes I will do the same curriculum over, or I will suggest to someone to do the same program again. And the reason is because, number one, it feels like the implementation is needed. But number two, I always give the metaphor of Montessori school. So Panina, my older daughter, was in Montessori school for a short period of time, and we kind of like totally drank the Montessori Kool-Aid, if you will. And one of the things that I found fascinating about the Montessori method is that, and probably a lot of people know about this, is that a child, a student, I'll call them, a student is in the same classroom for 3 years, same classroom with the same teacher, and Montessori has, they call it works. So the kind of exercises that they do, the way that they learn is they engage with different works, like different games and things that they have in the playroom. They even have the same works pretty much in that classroom for 3 years. And so, you know, an outsider might look and say, what is going on here? Like, how is it that this kid is learning? You know, like when she was in the first grade, she was learning this, and now in the second grade, she's learning the same thing again. And now in the third grade, she's learning it again, huh? That can't be good. But the truth is it's amazing, and here's why. The works in the classroom are specifically designed so that each cycle, each year, when the student engages in it, she can engage in a deeper level. So maybe the first year, let's say she's learning addition, she's engaging with this work at just a very surface level of learning how to do the addition. But maybe the second year, when she engages with this work, it's like it can go deeper for her, where it even teaches multiplication or, you know, multiples or whatever it is. And then the third year, she learns the concept even more deeply. So it can engage with the student in many ways. Now, for us, not all of our content can do that, but I actually want you to think about, like, probably a lot of your content can, right? I mean, back to the, you know, fear of visibility or visibility issues. I mean, like, I have clients that have been working with me for 7 years, and I'm not ashamed to say this because this doesn't mean that I'm not effective as a coach. I am very effective, but we will come back, like, once a year or once every 2 years to visibility issues for that client because they'll go through a cycle, they'll learn, and then they're ready for their next edge, and then we need to look at the visibility issues again. We need to go deeper, right? So when you have clients that are continuing, groups that are continuing, I want you to think about, again, learning. This is a little bit of learning versus implementation, and this is about depth in your material. Do you need to present new material, or do you need to think about the Montessori method and see what have you already presented and where can you go deeper with it? I've got lots more to share on continuing groups, but now is probably not the time for that. I think just the last piece that I'll share for today, I open up for more Q&A, is about any first time. So the first time that you're teaching a particular program or an offering, this comes up a lot. I get these questions a lot in my one-on-one work. People will say, like, well, I know I want it to be like recordings. You know, I want people to be able to get the recordings, so I'm going to, like, make the recordings ahead of time, and then, you know, they'll get them all at once or on a drip or, you know, whatever it is. I really like to think of any first time as a beta. I mean, even for me, after all of these years of experience, like, the first time I do a program, it's totally beta for me. It's totally experimental. You know, even though I have mastery in the content, I don't have mastery in facilitating that particular program yet, right? And I have to be honest with myself about that. And so because it's beta, I want to use that. I always leveraging, right? I want to use that to my advantage. So number one, whenever you're teaching new content, don't make it as a recording first. Teach it live first. Even if you never teach it live again, even if you don't end up using that recording, which you probably can, that's what I usually do, but even if you don't, you want to teach it live first because it's one thing to know the content in your head, but it's another thing when you actually teach it to real live people and then they ask questions and then they bring out like deeper pieces, right? Like now the next time that I teach about tracking, because I haven't taught it exactly in this way before. I've taught it around one-on-one work, but not group work. The next time I teach tracking, I can add in this piece of like taking notes or not taking notes, right? So do it live. You will learn so much more of what you already knew about your topic, but you'll get to articulate it. I love that about Q&A. Like, not only does it serve my clients, but I'm like, oh, my God, this topic is even – I have even more richness on this than I thought I did. These questions are bringing it all out, right? So that's number one about the first time and the beta. And the other thing is, like, this goes back to curriculum, too, is, like, sometimes it has to change, right? Use your real live people as feedback. You know, maybe you thought they needed 3 lessons on, I don't know, their mental habits or, you know, whatever it is, when, like, really they only needed 2 and you want to use that other class for, like, something you didn't even realize, like body image pieces that you didn't even realize or, you know, whatever it is. Whenever you teach something new, I'm very Virgo, right? And like I said earlier, I do fall into that myth of perfection. I like to be prepared, really very prepared and know what I'm doing. But I'm always like holding at the same time this openness. Like I'm in my mastery and my queen, but I'm also in my maiden and in my curiosity and not needing to be right, not needing for my plan to be the plan, and really working with my participants, like really partnering with them to see what is it that they actually need. How can I be of service now? And how can I be of service now? And how can I be of service now? That doesn't mean twisting yourself into a pretzel and throwing out your whole original plan and having to do tons of work over. I'm not suggesting that, but I am suggesting flexibility and openness and curiosity, not just the first time, really any time, but particularly the first time, like really in that process. Okay, so we still have some time left. Star 2, I'd love to hear any questions that you've got. I'd love to hear what you're taking away. Let me know if this call was helpful. It's the first time I'm teaching this call like this, as opposed to just doing like another ceremony. So, you know, let me know. And what can I answer for you? Star 2. Tina.
Hi, Joanna. Can you hear me?
I can.
Hi. I'm just so enjoying this. This is my very first coaching training, so to speak. And so there's just so many things that you bring up that I'm like, oh my God, I didn't think about that. Or wow, that's really, really different than the way I've seen things work with, like you said, people that just want to launch programs, but it's just not deep enough for me, you know? So I really appreciate you going that extra mile. I think my biggest question is with people that, like, let's say I do an in-person workshop, because I love doing in-person workshops. That's where I feel like my energy is the happiest. I do like to have like an event at the end that's, you know, a flyer already made for, and this is the one that's coming up, you know, so that there is kind of a following possibly that may happen at the end or maybe not. But then I really, really wanted to kind of step out of my comfort zone and do a very small, you know, like Facebook Live workshop. But do I really need to like have a landing page and all of that for, you know, for that very first time? Because I've never done it before.
Are
That's my
you
question.
Wanting people to pay for it or will it be free?
No, I want to do the first one for free just to kind of
oh,
have a beta.
Yeah. No, no.
Like,
you don't.
You know
nope,
what I mean?
You don't need, nope. You don't need a landing page at all. Let your community know via email. Send out an email or two. You're going to
okay.
be doing a Facebook Live. One of those emails should be like literally right before you go on. So
okay.
let them know in advance once or twice and then right before. And also let people on Facebook know as well. Or 2 days, I'm going to do this.
Right.
You know, and then, and I would do it. And then the other thing I would do is once it's done, I would send an email out and be like, in case you missed it, here it is. You can click on this, you know, link. Because some people won't be able to be there live. So you'll hit people
okay.
before and after to get more views.
I see. And then how many of those should I offer in the beginning? Because I don't really have a following yet or a platform. I mean, a very, very small one. But, you know, I really like to give that's how I built my business currently, like by just kind of doing a lot of offerings. But how many of those are appropriate and then you need to start, like, charging? You know what I'm saying?
It depends how you're using them, right? So
okay.
I've actually never charged for a Facebook. I don't even know if you can charge for a Facebook Live unless it's in a private group.
Right.
I never charge. I always use them as marketing tools.
Right.
So I'll use it. I'll give great contact. I'll interact and I'll say, hey, you know, if you want more of this, connect with me. Let's have a conversation about blah, blah, blah. Or I'm doing a bigger teleclass on this in 2 weeks. Go to this
right.
or, you know, whatever it is. So I think that
okay.
really the Facebook Lives are more like marketing tools. And
right.
I don't, you know, some people are very amazing and religious about it where they do it every week and they like,
I know.
They've grown their following. I am
yeah.
not that disciplined a lot because I do not like to be on video. I use
yeah.
it more as touch points. Like I'm about to do, in October, I'm about to do a preview teleclass for the Sacred Depths coach training. So in advance of that, I'm going to do like 2 or 3 Facebook Lives
okay.
to get people excited and to let them know about that preview teleclass. So I kind of do it
oh,
in advance of bigger things.
Okay, I love that. I love that. So it's like a precursor to then when I want to do like a paid Zoom coaching program. Okay. Well,
okay.
Hopefully. Okay, thank you. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Perdice.
Hi. So I'm curious as to when you do reach out to people. And because I'm thinking about how I had this group and it was like pulling teeth to get people to participate in the Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
But that's okay because I also know, too, that I could have probably been more active on it, too. So that's fine. I know my responsibility in it. But in the event that I'm going to pursue somebody and touch them, right, what can I, like, what is it that you would say? Because I'm always, like, stuck on the language because people can get so triggered by how you say something.
Mm-hmm.
So how, what do you say to like, bring their attention
yeah.
to the fact that you notice you're not participating?
Yeah. So I actually don't bring that to their attention because you're right, that can be triggering.
Right.
So instead I'll just reach out and say, hey, you know, I've been thinking so much about you. I'm wondering, like, let's say it's Curriculum Lab. I've been thinking so much about you, which I am. I really am always thinking about the people in the program. So that is, you want to be totally authentic. I've been thinking about so much about you. I'm wondering how it's going with your curriculum. Did you have a chance to listen yet to, you know, that second call? Let me know what you need. I'd love to hear how things are going and how can I support you?
Okay.
Okay, so that you're not blaming anyone for anything.
Right. You're just, like, touching base and wondering how
yeah.
things are going, if they need anything. Okay, great.
Exactly. Okay, awesome. Brooke.
Hi, Joanna. Thanks so much for the call today. I had a question. I'm actually diving into a second curriculum, so thank you so much for all the tools and inspiration. But I'm thinking about a shorter program to sort of get a larger client base for this group coaching that I'm going to be launching next summer. So it's a half-day retreat with a group coaching component, but a very small group, an at-home retreat. And I'm just curious your thoughts on sharing with a group that might only meet once. They might sign up again and go further, but they might only just come once. And I'm just thinking about, like, the time it takes to build trust in a group, and if you had any thoughts about that.
I don't think I totally understand the question. Like, sharing.
Building sharing, opportunities for sharing.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, my theory, I mean, especially if it's in person. Did you say it's in person? Or when you said
no.
at home, you mean they're all going to be at home. Will you be on mm-hmm. video or will you be on phone?
I'm kind of thinking phone only. That way, if it's a retreat, they could just not worry about what they were looking like. You know, it might
mm-hmm.
be more freeing that way.
Yeah.
But I'm open to the video as well.
And how long will it be?
It'll be a four-hour retreat.
Yep.
With other activities, but I was thinking about a 90-minute call during that 4 hours.
Yep. So I always veer on the side of asking for more vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
I think that a lot can be created. Obviously, you don't want to ask such vulnerable questions that you can't hold the space for if it's over the phone and only 90 minutes. But I think that you can get really deep, and the way for people to open is first and foremost for you to share yourself. So I never ask for vulnerable shares until I've already shared something vulnerable about the topic for me.
Okay.
And then, of course, you know, we don't do this in Curriculum Lab. We do this in the ritual training, but there are some like protocols in terms of just really naming the space safe and sacred and letting people know that it's a held container. You know, and the resistances, that has to do a little bit with the resistances we were talking about, step 3 of the curriculum. If you do all of that correctly and you share vulnerably yourself, you'll be surprised at how much people are willing to share.
Thank you. I really appreciate your perspective.
Yeah, you're welcome. Sounds like it
thank
was
you.
Really wonderful. You're welcome.
Oh, thank you.
And Rana.
Hey there again. So question, kind of going back to the groups of 2 to 6,
mm-hmm.
and the holding that kind of Facebook group container. So maybe to help clarify here, right now I primarily work with clients one-to-one, except for this group of gentlemen that I'm currently working with that I think I've mentioned in the lab
yeah.
before.
Yep.
That being said, I've had a Facebook group for clients that have stepped into my 2 highest level offerings,
mm-hmm.
Where they can come in and ask questions and so on and so forth.
So they're private clients, but they're part of this Facebook group.
Correct. So
uh-huh.
it isn't a have to.
Yep.
You know, it's offered as, and here's the bonus Facebook group, so you can
yeah.
use this space for additional support and Q&A. And, you know, I'll upload some bonus materials there occasionally and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, over the last, I would probably say maybe 6 months, I've noticed this kind of drop-off
yeah.
of the level of engagement and also the level of that kind of interactive support that I've seen in my own group in the past and in other groups that I'm also a part of.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering if you could speak to that, because what initially felt so strong and tight and participatory can sometimes now feel like everyone's just kind of off on their own little island.
Yeah. I'm not surprised that you're saying that, because as you were describing it, you know,
mm-hmm.
what was going through my mind is that Facebook group might be tough because it's obviously small by nature, right? It's just your private
yes.
clients. It's not hundreds, mm-hmm. thousands of people.
Nope.
And they, aside from like them seeing their little pictures of each other in Facebook, they don't, other and knowing that they're connected through you, so they're probably great people because they're working with you, they don't really know each other.
Actually, some of them do.
Oh, okay. Well, even
because
so,
some of
though,
those clients have come from shared communities and other realms.
But they still haven't been in that container with you. So I don't know, this is
okay.
one idea. Like as you were talking, I was thinking, what if every 6 months you offered a group call to all of your private clients that were in that Facebook group?
I have done that.
And has that helped with engagement?
It has, and what's interesting
mm-hmm.
is that I recently offered not only a group call, I also offered a bonus, similar to kind of that get it done kind of a container,
mm-hmm.
because I'm really familiar with that.
Yeah.
And the response, quite honestly, was dismal, which surprised
mm-hmm.
me.
Let's see. How far in advance did you let people know?
A month and a half with reminders.
Yep.
So that we had plenty of time to get stuff on their calendars.
Yeah.
And for me to kind of, you know, prepare as well.
Yeah. So this may not be the solution, but this is where I would still play there. And I'm thinking
okay.
a couple of things. Number one, I would embed it into people's programs when they sign up. Or when they re-sign with you. So in other words, I'd figure out the date for like the next 6 months, like put a date on the calendar, and anyone new that signs or re-signs, it's like that's not just a bonus that you're adding in the middle, but that's actually part of it.
It's part of the program. Okay, that
yep,
makes sense.
Yep, and the data set,
forward.
And like when they sign, you tell them about this, and you tell them why it's going to be awesome, and you highly recommend them being there. And then for the people that are already going to be in maybe in the middle of their programs, and so they're not, you know, getting it right then and there when they sign up, I would just spend 2 minutes at the end of a private call and actually say, like, this is when the next group call is going to be. You know, if they were there last time, great. You know, I know you were there last time. I know you really enjoyed it, whatever. Or I know that you weren't there last time. I know it's so hard to add another thing, but this is really, I really see this as vital because X, Y, Z, right? Like, whatever the thing is, whatever the topic, you know, that sort of thing. And I think that may bring more people to it, whether it's a get it done or topic, whatever. And then the idea is that call, yes, maybe your training or your speaking, whatever it is, but it's a lot about community as well. And then you want to give a specific home, like Facebook homework from whatever that is. Maybe a pre-Facebook assignment and then a post-Facebook assignment. So maybe the pre-Facebook assignment is like, you know, whatever the topic is, let's say it's a get it done thing, you know, what is it that you're going to be focusing on? Why is this thing that you want to accomplish that day so important? You know, blah, blah, whatever it is. And then you want to also give them something to post about afterwards.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I can't promise, but I would experiment there because I have a feeling that will move things. And again, it's similar to what I was sharing with Susie with the homework, energy follows energy. So if you take a couple minutes at the end of someone's call to talk to them about it, tell them why it's important, why you're so excited to do it, it can that has the potential to get people more excited.
Okay. I like the idea about being more proactive as I'm onboarding new folks with regard to that kind of a schedule.
Yeah.
And maybe that's where part of that miss has been potentially created. Some good takeaways here. So I'll re-listen to this as well and come back to that. So thank you. That's helpful.
You're welcome. All right. What a wonderful call today. I'd love to hear if there's any other questions you guys have, let me know in the Facebook group. Let me know what's coming up for you. Also, I hope you're continuing with your curriculums. If there's anything you need on that front, let me know. And we will be live in 2 weeks from today. I'm wishing you a wonderful, wonderful rest of your day. Bye.